Now quickly take a snapshot of your mind, those of you who are chanting. I feel confident that you'll notice like a fresh breeze has blown through and ventilated the chambers of your mind. That is the potent effect of the mantra, and it is the prime method of mind control. So let's settle down now and have a good chat, nice discussion. Because I'm here to tell you that the reason why you feel suffering in this world is because of your mind. I'm here to tell you that your suffering is not so much because of your body. In fact, I'm here to tell you that the reason why you have a body in the first place is because of your mind. So if you can control your mind, then you can actually control whether or not you take birth and die in this world. That is the power of mind control. Now let's first briefly deal with some contemporary scientific perspectives. As you might surmise, scientists know very little about the mind. No one's ever seen a mind. Yes, occult persons with psychic powers, they claim to see people's auras, they claim to see people's mental bodies. But in the ordinary laboratory world of science, no one will say they've seen the mind. Everyone accepts that the mind exists by effect. Now, up until very recently, no one in the scientific world would completely accept that there is a relationship between your mind and your body. That is, that your mental state can influence disease. Now, however, that point is totally accepted by scientists. You can stress your mind so much that you become sick. Okay, you all knew that, but not as a scientific fact. You knew that as a folk notion, but it has only been accepted by science very recently. Very recently. How? Stress drives your body, and stress is felt in the mind. Physical stress in terms of bodily injury, okay, that everybody knew about. That's no challenge to scientists. But the effect of anxiety and mental stress upon the body as a scientific fact, that has only been recently accepted. Now you may know everyone is becoming stress conscious and anxiety conscious. Right? It's now acceptable. Ooh, I've got too much stress, it's not good for my health. I've got too much anxiety, it's going to make me sick. It is now very acceptable to say that. And in fact, at least in New Zealand, where I'm based most of the time, you can accuse your employer of keeping you in a job that has stressful conditions. And you can take him to court. Yes. You can accuse your employer that this job that you hired me for is too stressful, the conditions produce too much anxiety, so you are liable. So this is how much mental states have made it into the practical world. All right. Now, if we're going to successfully deal with our mind, we're going to have to go back before this life. Most of you, I'm sure, have at least a top understanding of what is known as reincarnation, or more accurately known as transmigration of the soul. Most of you have some sentiment towards the fact that you have more than one life. But let us think deeply about this phenomenon of having more than one life. What causes you to change one body after another? It is the mind that does that. The fact that you have a gross physical body in this life means that you had a certain kind of mental state in your past life. This is all explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains that whatever state of mind you have at the time of your previous death, that state of mind will determine the type of existence, the type of body you get in this life. In this way, I'm sure you can see that the mind is indeed very important. It's driving the whole process of reincarnation. The intelligent person wants to understand how to control the mind so that you can control your future births. Maybe you'll become so expert at controlling the mind that you won't take birth again. That is what I call very expert lifestyle engineering. Yes, I'm appealing to you all to become engineers of your lifestyle. You know you can go to the uni and learn about chemical engineering, electrical engineering, or civil engineering. But where will you learn lifestyle engineering? Lifestyle engineering centers upon the mind, because the ancient Vedic knowledge of India explains how matter, all material affairs, proceed from subtle to gross. Subtle means subtle matter, mind, emotions, intelligence. Gross means gross matter, earth and water and fire and so on and so forth. So, according to how the subtle things are, that determines what the gross things are. The main gross thing that we are familiar with is our own body. Now please think about this point, that our body, our gross physical body, is based upon our mind. The mind is the engine that drives reincarnation. In other words, we're not just dealing with a mind that has come into being in this lifetime. If you want to successfully get a grip on your mind, you must accept the mind's existence in previous birth. Then, you'll understand that the mind is like a repository or a warehouse where all sorts of impressions are stored for many, many births. Therefore, when you identify with your mind, right now, you're identifying with a storage container that has things from many lifetimes. Those of you who have computers, you know that Windows has its wastebasket, where you delete files and they go into this waste can. And you can set a limit, you know, after a certain amount, empty out the waste can, empty out the trash can of all the deleted stuff, or you can indicate not at all. Well, your mind has no limit for how much trash it can accommodate. It's got file after file after file stored in it from countless births. So that accumulation of impressions, this is what you identify as yourself. All these things running around in your head don't necessarily come from this life. So if you're going to do a cleaning job on your mind, it's going to be a lot of work. Most people now, please note this, most people have never made an effort to control their mind. Therefore, they are deceived into thinking that their mind is peaceful. I'll give you an example. In Australia, or in Victoria, this part of Australia, do some houses have attics? You call them attics? Okay. Some have attics. Now, generally people store things in attics, and you don't go up into the attic very often. So, let us say you haven't been upstairs into your attic for a year or so, and finally you go up and look in the attic. It will look very peaceful to you, because no one's been up there. But what happens when you start to wave a dust cloth around? The air fills with dust, you start coughing, sneezing. Wow, I thought this was very neat and tidy up here. Now I just made a little effort to clean and the whole air is full of dust. Similarly, most people, because they've not made the effort to clean and control their mind, they think their mind is peaceful, when actually their mind is just totally agitated, totally disturbed. It's a very tricky thing to possess a mind. Now, how do you know that your mind is out of control, even though it may feel peaceful to you? Most people think, yeah, I'm normal, I have a normal mind. But if you analyze their lifestyle, you'll see they are constantly acting according to extraneous desires, or superficial desires, desires that have been implanted into them. Buy this, travel there, get this, do that. These are all imprints upon their mind from the outside. So most people, they'll think, I'm normal. I mean, some days I'm feeling a little sad in my mind. Other days I'm feeling a bit elated in my mind. Still, I'm normal. It's very difficult for most people to grasp that their mind is completely out of control. But here's a good way you can make the test. This is one way. Try to see how long you can go without shopping. Before you make this test, stock your refrigerator with the basic foods, and then see how many weeks can go by in which you don't go shopping. You don't buy anything from the store. Then you'll understand how wild the mind is. Or, if you are habituated to watching television, try to turn the television off for a few weeks and see what happens. Then you'll feel the power of the mind screaming at you. Ah! I want to watch something. Entertain me. Or if you try to stop shopping, then you'll feel the power of the mind. You need to buy something. You haven't bought something in 2 weeks. Come on. You're going to disappear. Your identity will disintegrate unless you consume. You know the descriptive phrase for that kind of activity. It's jokingly called retail therapy. You'll feel better about yourself if you buy something. When you're feeling down, shop. And then you'll verify your identity. You'll verify your existence world. But anyway, if you want to know how wild your mind is, because we might be thinking, I think my mind's wild. I'm kind of on top of my scene. Just stop shopping for a few weeks, or stop watching television for a few weeks. Or if you're really brave, you really want to observe the mind's mad movements, try to be celibate for a long time. Then you'll see the mind grab you by the throat and just flash all sorts of images. Do you remember? And it will imagine so many current situations and possibilities. So, These are good ways to test how wild is our mind. Once you begin to get a healthy respect for the barbarian nature of the mind, then you can start to work on the mind, making it your friend. You'd be surprised now that most people do not get a real perspective. They don't get a real vision of what their mind's about. Most people think, I'm normal. My mind is just like everyone else's mind. Particularly, you know, people take a lot of intoxication, alcohol, marijuana, to hide from their own mind. That's a big purpose of the weekend. To hide from your mind by loading it up with alcohol and drugs. You don't want to think too much. You don't want to notice your own mind. The work week is over, and so on the weekend, you don't want to think too much. You don't want to be caught in a solitary, reflective moment. And therefore, you fill up on all sorts of intoxicants, and you don't have to deal with yourself. You make the experiment. Adopt one or two or three of the methods we discussed for getting the mind to reveal itself to you, for getting the mind to reveal to you how wild it is. Then, by consulting the Vedic knowledge of ancient India, particularly Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna gives knowledge of the mind, you'll find out that the mind is not just a culprit in this lifetime. The mind is a culprit for many previous lifetimes. If you want to stop birth and death, now every intelligent human being should want to stop his or her own cycle of repeated birth and death. Don't just think that your birth happened randomly or accidentally. No, your birth happened because of your mental state in your previous life. The mental state in your previous life demanded a birth, demanded another gross body of matter, because you had so many unfulfilled desires at the time of death in your previous lifetime. You see, material desires are never fulfilled. So what happens at the time of death is that all your unfulfilled material desires are recorded by the laws of nature, and therefore you get another material body in your next body as an opportunity to try to fulfill desires that are never fulfilled. This is the mystery of material existence. We have desires that can never be fulfilled, but still we try. And, as always, the desires are not fulfilled. Therefore, what is the outcome? Repeated birth and death. Again and again and again. Taking birth and dying, taking birth and dying. Because at the time of death, there are all these unfulfilled material desires. And because they are there, we must take another gross physical birth to do the impossible, try and satisfy those desires. If you can control your mind, there is every possibility that you can control the other senses. And there is every possibility that you can stop the cycle of repeated birth and death, because you have a grip on your own mind. Now you can just imagine reaching into your head and grabbing your mind, so to speak, and just holding tight. Okay, that's it. You're not going anywhere. I've got you totally under control. You can't do that, but you can imagine in an allegorical way what it would be like to have your mind under your control. Most people are consciously or unconsciously driven around by their mind. I'm sure you've all seen persons who you can actually see an idea enter into their mind, and you can see them become swept away by this idea. Yes. We've discussed how the mind influences our future birth. But we should also discuss how the mind influences our present birth. Check out your mind and see all the desires that have become imprinted upon it. Check it out. The way you do that is by sifting through your desires in your mind and then asking yourself, why do I really think that fulfilling this desire is so important? Why do I think I'll be satisfied by trying to fulfill this desire? And then you'll see there's so much in the mind which is not really important for you, but it's bouncing around there with so many other perceptions. So what are we to do? Number one, we can just ignore this whole subject matter. Oh, who cares? I feel all right. Why do I have to worry about my mind? My neighbors appreciate me. My family appreciates me. Isn't that enough? Why do I have to become concerned about my mind? I don't have enough to do already. I've got to go to school. I've got to work. I've got to relate to other people. So why, on top of this long list of responsibilities, do you place mind control? So what if my mind's out of control? Life could be a lot worse, you know? In this way, I'm trying to show you that most people do not place mind control as a high priority in their life. They'll develop their physical strength. They'll go to the gym. They'll work out. They'll jog in the morning. They'll do hatha yoga, various asanas. They'll do tai chi and other forms of martial arts. They'll go to the health food shop and only eat organic food. All these things they'll do, but they will neglect the mind. Interestingly, statistics show that in the developed nations, in the first world, although they don't have as bad physical disease rate as third world countries, they have an abnormally high amount of mental problems. I was just speaking in Mumbai, formerly known as Bombay, and I was speaking at India's finest scientific university. And there I told the young students that 25% of the brightest high school students in the USA have considered committing suicide because the pressure is so great. 25% of the brightest high school students in the USA have considered suicide as an option. So this shows you how rampant mental problems are. I also explained to them that statistics reveal that in the past 40 years, in other words, since about 1960, in the USA, there's been a 1,000% increase in childhood depression. 1,000%. All over the world, in the first world countries, people are seeing an immense explosion of mental problems. It's not that people can just live automatically such a stressful life and there's no negative side effects. Now, people are literally driving themselves crazy these days. Sure, you know examples of that. There's so much stress, so much anxiety, so much uncertainty, so much pressure, even while you're having so many so-called conveniences at home. Yes, you may have a dishwashing machine, a vac machine, all the kinds of conveniences and appliances are there, but still your mind is full of anxiety. I think you can remember, sometimes when you were having a happy time, maybe with your friends or your particular friend, and it seemed like everything should be carefree and joyful, but then some anxiety came to your mind. I'm sure you remember when that happened. Maybe you went on a trip somewhere to a beautiful beach. Maybe you went overseas to some magic spot. And just when you should be enjoying it, the sun was shining, it wasn't too hot, it wasn't too cool, fresh breezes, beautiful scenery, palm trees, and pink sands, or golden sands. Everything was picturesque. Everything was just spot on. But you had a streak of anxiety in your mind, and you couldn't fully enjoy the situation. I know you've all had that experience. That shows you how mental problems can disrupt our whole life. And you don't have to be some kind of mad person or completely crazed person in order to have mental problems. This is a very important point to understand. So, if we can understand these techniques for freeing the mind of anxiety, then number one, our physical existence will be more healthy, and number two, we have a chance to pull up at the root this horrible weed of mental dissatisfaction. First, however, we must accept the necessity for controlling the mind. Most people cannot see that the mind controls them. They're not able to detect how their mind orders them, buy this, go here, do this, smell this, feel that. This is all being dictated by the mind, all these commands. So, it takes a brave person these days to want to make some tests on your own mind to see whether or not you're under the control of the mind. Once you become aware of the mind's velocity or its great power in this lifetime, then we can move to the next step in which you have to understand the mind as causing repeated birth and death. Mind is not a very innocent thing. Sometimes you say, oh, I changed my mind about that. It sounds so innocent, it sounds so simple. But anytime the mind is involved, life is very complicated. In Bhakti Yoga, Krishna consciousness, we learn how to make the mind our best friend. Lord Krishna explains this technique very nicely in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains that you can act in such a way that your own mind is your worst enemy. But you can also act in such a way that your own mind is your best friend. It all depends on how you're using your mind. Do you recognize the mind's strengths and weaknesses? What Bhakti Yoga, Krishna consciousness, is purporting to do is to, number one, reduce and extinguish all of your current mental anxiety. And then number two, cleanse the mental impressions that have accumulated in your mind for many births. Once this starts happening, this dynamic churning process, then you can start to feel peace. Now someone might say, oh, it sounds good, but you know, this mind is so powerful. But it's an example of how powerful the mind is. If you just think of, it knows from India, if you just think of Delhi, immediately you're there. That's mental power. That's how quick the mind travels. You think of something, you're there. So it may seem impossible for you to control such a powerful thing as the mind. And indeed, in Bhagavad Gita, the hero, Arjuna, says to Krishna, I hear what you're saying about mind control. I hear what you're saying about self-discipline, being on top of your own mind. But it seems to me so difficult. It seems to me to be more difficult difficult than controlling the wind. Try to go outside and control the blowing wind. It won't work. The wind won't listen to you. It will just blow as it likes. So our minds are often like that. Bhakti yoga, or Krishna consciousness, is the system and culture for making the mind your friend, for training your mind how to deliver itself from material illusion. This kind of education is the most important. How to train the mind so that it delivers you from illusion. In that way, the mind becomes your friend. But if you use your mind to load up on all sorts of degraded impressions, and you can rationalize it also, well, everybody does this. Why should I be singled out as being degraded when everybody does this, they do that? Now, if you can make the mind your friend, it will not drag you into degraded behavior. Now, what is degraded behavior? Degraded behavior means activities that cause you to lose your spiritual self-identity. Those are degraded activities. If you engage in degraded activities, you don't have the self-clarity or self-motivation to deal with your own mind. And that's what we have going on today. Countless people with no incentive, not even a slight desire to discipline or control their own mind. Advertisers love this. If you can get people to buy on impulse, then your company is very successful. Every company lives with the hope that they can appeal to the impulse buyers. Businesses don't like customers who calculate everything and read all the small print and weigh the pros and cons. No. Businesses like people who just, oh yes, that lipstick would make me look so much better. Yes, I'll buy it. But look, everyone is smoking that kind of cigarette. I should also smoke like that same brand. These are the kind of people. These are the kind of persons that advertisers, business people like. Not the ones who analyze everything and sift through. They like people who, you know, get swayed. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, that's for me. And even better, if there's somebody in your family who says, ooh, get that for me, that's what I want. The more that pressure is there, the better. You can get, if you're a business person, you can get this kind of response from the kids' minds or the wife's mind, then it's very good. Somebody, at least one person in the family has to feel touched. And cry out, yes, get it for me, Daddy, buy it for me. Sure, many of you had that experience. And you thought, well, it's just an innocent home life experience. No, it's not innocent. You have just witnessed the power of a degraded mind, a mind that has been subjected to lower control. The fact is, something must always control the mind, whether it's higher or lower. So your whole art in living your lifestyle is to put your mind under the best kind of influences possible. In other words, what I'm telling you is that your mind is always going to be subject to influence. Therefore, you, with your lifestyle, have to engineer the type of life that allows your mind to always be near the best possible influence. And what is the best possible influence? If you can contact the spiritual energy, which has no beginning and end. Simultaneously, if you can contact the source of all spiritual energy, which has no beginning, then you can start to master the mind. Because when our mind comes in contact with the Supreme, the mind becomes peaceful and joyful. But when the mind is always operating on its own, to please itself, making plans how to please itself, then there is never any satisfaction. I know that so many of you have tried at one point to satisfy your mind. It just doesn't work. Finally, you just say, give me a drink, and you just be done with it. But other than becoming a bit intoxicated, no one has any way how to deal with the mind. Mental anxiety, as we said, can ruin even the best situations. It's like drinking your favorite beverage, and in it there are some pieces of sand. So as you're drinking, you're relishing the taste of your favorite beverage, but you keep crunching your teeth on these particles of sand. Material life is like that. It's frustrating because... What is my mission in life? If you're not aware of your ultimate goal in life, you'll take all the impediments very seriously. And you'll say, just these.
There's more folks that control my mind. No one's doing it. Why should I do it? But if you can connect your mind to superior spiritual pleasure, as Lord Krishna is describing in Bhagavad Gita, if your mind gets a chance to contact the superior pleasure potency of Krishna, then you'll agree that there is another lifestyle that should be lived by you. Then you'll agree to engineer your own personal lifestyle, where you can become predominated by another kind of energy of Krishna. Not the material energy, but the spiritual energy. That is what the Hare Krishna mantra does. It connects you to the spiritual energy of Krishna. How does our life fill with repetition and boredom? It's because we are doing the same thing every day, so mechanically, but we cannot put our heart into what we do. Therefore, we get bored so easily by doing activities that we can't put our heart into. I always tell the story about my brother in the USA. He runs his own clinic. And it would seem that he's very successful. He has a nice house, of course. 2.5 children, 2.5 cars in the garage, he has all the right social statistics. I'll never forget, he was in his late 30s, he came to me and said, tell me, how did you avoid the routine? He had tears in his eyes, how did you avoid the routine? Oh, my life is so repetitive, I can't take it anymore. How did you avoid that? This is an example of how you can have all the conveniences, good wealth, but your mind is dissatisfied. Oh, it's the same thing every day. Krishna consciousness, or bhakti yoga, means how to engineer your lifestyle so that your mind is always in contact with the fresh breezes of the spiritual world. When you chant the Hare Krishna mantra, then your mind is brought into contact with the fresh breezes of the spiritual world. Then you become rejuvenated, then you become enlivened, because by chanting the Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra, your life becomes equipped with the spiritual tools for being successful in this world. What does it mean to be successful in the world? It means to be able to live peacefully with your own mind, to have your mind as a friend. That's what it means to be successful. Don't look at how many clothes you have or what kind of cars you have, all the other material trappings.
Look and see, how is this person's mind under control? That should be your number one criterion when you are choosing a marriage partner. Yet how many of you have asked your potential partner, is your mind under control? No, you don't do that. You're considering so many other factors. If you don't realize that you are not so much going to live with someone's body, you're going to live with their mind. If their mind is out of control, you're going to have a very hellish home life. Therefore, it is very necessary that you ask your prospective partner, as they call these things, is your mind under control? What steps have you taken in your life to keep your mind fresh, to avoid repetition, to avoid rust? Just like you know how a car becomes rusty, similarly our minds can become rusty because we don't use them for the high transcendental purpose that they're meant for. However, when you connect your mind to Krishna consciousness, suddenly the possibilities open up for you. Now I see what to do with the mind. Now I see that the mind can become an instrument for meditating upon the highest spiritual reality, Lord Krishna, and in this way my whole existence, even though my existence is so tiny, my whole existence becomes filled, surcharged with the spiritual energy coming from the spiritual realm. By the way of the Hare Krishna mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra connects you with the spiritual flow of energy in the spiritual realm. And everything in the spiritual world is a direct emanation of Lord Krishna's personal beauty and individuality. Now, in this way, your mind can be the source of great enlightenment for you, if you know how to deal with it. But if you simply let the mind go its own way, you will notice the repetitive patterns again and again. Those repetitive patterns can become so uncomfortable that you might even turn to drugs daily just to get over that feeling of repeating, repeating, repeating the same thing every day, same thing every night. How many years can I go on like this? Maybe some of you have already asked yourself those kind of questions. So, tonight we want to impress, or try to impress everyone with the responsibility to look into their own mind and try to elevate it. And we like that you all have a wider view, that you're not just dealing with the mind as a collection container for the impressions of this life. No, you're also finding in the mind so many impressions from so many previous births. If you can control your mind, then you can get a grip on your life. But people are not very interested in controlling the mind. They don't even think there's any disadvantage to having an uncontrolled mind. In this way, billions of people are suffering in this world, being driven by their own uncontrolled mind. One last point before we take some questions. If there is any hope for good in terms of the mind, then our mind has to acknowledge something superior to it. Now, mind is matter. There's no question of mind over matter. I know most of you have heard that phrase. If you see, someone bending a spoon with their mental power, you might think, well, that's mind over matter. No, it's matter over matter. The mind is material, and of course the spoon is material. So, there's no question that mental power alone can make you successful in life, because mental power is material. However, if you put the mind, that material mind, if you put it in contact with Krishna's spiritual energy, Lord Krishna's spiritual energy, then the mind will automatically be attracted and it will become peaceful. That's what the mind does when it has contacted the supreme perfect spiritual beauty of Krishna. The point is that you should recognize, unless your mind comes in contact with a superior agent or superior entity, it's going to continue to be rusty and in the doldrums. We all need to do ourselves the favor of rousing our own mind and putting it in contact with something spiritually sublime. And in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, there's nothing more spiritually sublime than learning the art, science, and culture of doing everything for Krishna's pleasure. In conclusion, I'll say, when we talk about the mind, we are talking about the potential for pleasure, but we'll always miss out, and then we'll be stuck in repetition and rust. And that feeling of repetition and rust in our mind can become so deep that we'll even injure ourselves, we'll injure others, we'll become so full of despair. So I ask you all to make a few tests to see if indeed your mind is out of control. Try to go some weeks without shopping. See how many weeks you can go without buying anything. If you're really bold and really adventurous, try to do a sizable stint of celibacy and then see what flashes in your mind as you are withholding yourself. Of course, you'll say, well, that's unnatural. Whatever desires that come to us, we should act on. No, that is not so. As a human being, you have the capacity to choose. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita is trying to teach you how to choose the most beneficial lifestyle, since you have that capacity to choose. As an animal, you cannot choose. Everything is dictated to you by material nature. But as a human being, you can choose that I will not submit to this desire. Or even better, I will replace this lower desire with a higher desire, and in that way I won't have any problems. All these kind of things we learn, you know, in Bhakti Yoga, Krishna consciousness. So if tonight, if at least I can impress upon you the need to do something about your own mind, if at least I can get you to see that the mind has caused so much havoc, not only in this life, but in our previous life, if I can get you to see that, and then start contemplating a solution, then I think we might have rendered you some valuable service. So, any questions? Yes?
So, could you tell me a picture-visual channel in the old clock? Picture-visual clock in the channel.
Well, choice for me is very easy because, you know, I just wear this basic color. So, yes? No, this is the color cloth worn by someone who's a monk. In India, traditionally, the monks wear saffron. But I wasn't always a monk. Oh, cotton. I have a t-shirt that's also cotton. Yes. Yes, all orange. That's important for you? Why? Yes. In India, someone who's a monk traditionally wears saffron. I wasn't always a monk. But I chose to do so because I was concerned with how to experience the highest pleasure and teach others what the highest pleasure is. It shows you that I should know what I'm talking about when it comes to the mind. Yeah, it's like a uniform. Yeah.
Identifying
as the mind?
Identifying the mind.
You have to be able to look at your thoughts and emotions and see that you're different from them. Yes, you, the spirit soul, are witnessing the movements of your mind through thought patterns, emotion patterns, but it takes a very skillful or purified person to be able to witness the movements of his or her own mind. I'm suggesting you should start to do that. Not that you sit around all day watching your mind, so to speak. I wonder what my mind is doing now. No, you'll get very bored with that. I'm suggesting much better things. I'm suggesting you take up the process of Krishna consciousness for putting the mind in contact with the greatest source of pleasure. That everybody, I feel, could agree to do. So, I'm not advocating that you simply watch your mind all day and night. Although it's an interesting experiment to do it at first so that you can see how uncontrolled the mind is. What I am advocating is you take up the art, culture, and techniques for connecting your mind to superior pleasure.
By doing that, you are realizing that you get can focus like that.
You can do it quicker, but that's why we started off with the mantra chanting. When you chant the Hare Krishna mantra, very quickly you can see the mind and its movements, and you don't become fooled. That's the quick way. Because the Hare Krishna mantra has that perfect clarity, so that you can see all these things very easily. Anyone else have questions?
Yes. What is the pleasure of Krishna? What is that lifestyle? What is that?
The pleasure of Krishna? Well, that's a very nice question. You are part of Krishna. You are a tiny bit of consciousness, and Krishna is the supreme conscious person. You are the tiny.